On tonight's show, it's week two, but week one, we had G5 upsets everywhere.
I'm so excited to talk about it. We've got our hashtag Know Your Enemy game of the week. We've got our best bets from this week and last week.
Roll it. On the show tonight, we've got...
Every night was a battle.
You can lock this in, take it to the bank.
No class at all. It's unbelievable.
They should see a relatively quick turnaround.
Show me the money.
Big water slide, snow cone truck and everything.
One team stands alone.
Well, you know what I think about Troy.
I'm losing my mind over here.
We've got the moment you've all been waiting for.
Of course.
Welcome in to another exciting episode of the Bench Boys podcast. I'm Colin Cahill.
I'm Thomas Gleaton.
And you know it, we're the Bench Boys. This is our show. We are a group of five podcasts with an emphasis on
the Sun Belt.
Yep, you know it. Thanks for coming in. Obviously.
I'm so psyched right now.
Lord have mercy. It was a great week for G5.
It was a great week one, period.
It was. Football's back. That's as simple as it gets.
So let's go ahead and get to the one thing we know everybody is talking about. Let's hit it right out of the gate.
Out of the gate.
You know it. The biggest thing to happen probably in college football this week.
Honestly, we have a contender for number one upset of the year right now.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm looking. Yeah, no, that'd be number one. You're talking about a 2-10 team in Georgia State. Going to Neyland Stadium in Knoxville and knocking off Tennessee.
Jeremy Pruitt,
second year. Not a great start, Mr. Pruitt. Not a great start. If you haven't heard already, 38-30, huge win for Sean Elliott. One thing, that probably just took Sean Elliott off the hot seat for the next, 3 years.
Oh, absolutely. Even after last year, it was... We were wondering. I think we were coming into this. If we had done a hot seat thing, I probably would have said him. But right now, dude, golden.
He's off. You're golden. And 38-30 win. Shouldn't have been that close. It was 38-23 with literally 2 seconds to go. We did find out Tennessee Twitter, they are still alive, right? Yeah. Apparently, Tennessee, the game's still going. Tennessee decided to go AWOL off
on
of Twitter
yeah.
for 24 hours at one point. Didn't even tweet about their last touchdown. They were not happy.
Yeah.
Not happy at all. But no, let's get into that game.
You've got the stats pulled up right there.
Yeah, neither of us, just going to let everybody know. I'm pretty sure even you, the listener, probably didn't pick this. But no. Neither of us had Georgia State winning, for one thing. And neither of us had Georgia State outrushing Tennessee, of all things. And it wasn't even close. Georgia State, 213 yards rushing. Tennessee, 93.
Ooh.
93.
Ooh.
Where is the Tennessee team that...
There is one rushing yard for each percentage point the fans voted.
There you go.
Tennessee.
There you go.
I think
Tennessee might have had a 93% chance to win this game.
Right?
On ESPN FBI as well. First downs, Georgia State, 24 first downs.
Woo!
In one game.
24.
That's incredible. 10 of 17 on third down. Those right there, that's formula for winning ball games. First downs, and you complete third downs.
We definitely talked about that last week.
Oh, we did.
And we did.
The other thing we talked about, time of possession. Hold the ball. Guess who won the TOP?
I'm going to go with the Panthers.
Yeah, TOP did. 30 minutes, 34 seconds to 29-26. So,
and some change.
But hey, you win that. Passing, 139. But you want to know what? Go look at Troy's game against LSU. Brandon Silvers didn't throw the ball all that great. We just ran.
Yeah.
And he held onto the ball. Turnover. Tennessee, 3 turnovers. 2 fumbles lost. Interception. Georgia State, 1.
1.
1 fumble.
1 fumble. Did they lose it?
Yes, they did. Oh,
well, still, they won the turnover battle.
Penalties, 5 for only 30 yards of penalties.
For Georgia State?
For Georgia State.
That is called discipline.
There you go. So those stats right there, Georgia State also 53 rushing attempts on the game. That's literally ground and pound. That is the name of that game right there. What a great game for Georgia State. Program changing. I think program defining. Biggest win in program history, no doubt. Huge win for Sean Elliott. Just great win. Obviously, the Sun Belt. We had a lot of big games this week.
We did.
You know,
we did.
We had LSU. We had Texas A&M. I mean, we had some big teams on the docket this week. And you know, me and you, after we recorded last week's episode, I said, "Man, it would be so nice if we just get one,
just one." And we got it.
We got the one.
We got it.
We got the one. So.
Quick rundown. We all know Mississippi State beat Louisiana. I think it was 38-28. It was a 10-point win. Nebraska beat South Alabama 35-21. SMU beat Arkansas State. That was a 1-point game, wasn't it?
37-30.
One possession. Yep. Close enough.
Yep.
LSU beat Georgia Southern by a whole lot. Yeah. And then Boise State actually upset. Well, it wasn't an upset, but Boise State beat Florida State in Tallahassee. So
yeah, I didn't think that was kind of the shocker was Boise State. And Florida State looked... I mean, they were up 18 points at one point in that game.
They should have won that game. There's Cold no apart. Reason.
Willie Taggart, never been a fan of him.
I'll issue a little bit of a hot take right now. Willie Taggart should be on a hotter seat than Jeremy Pruitt right now.
Oh, I think he is. I think he is. I mean, if you look at Willie Taggart's record, his winning percentage, he didn't have a winning percentage at Western Kentucky. Florida, mm-hmm. he was barely over 500. I think it was like 504. And then even at Oregon, he was 544 win percentage.
At Oregon?
Like at Oregon. Yikes. So, and he was only at Oregon for like 2 years. And yikes. Oregon was a joke when he was there, to be honest with you. I don't think he's the right fit for Florida State. That's a whole other conversation. The one thing that shocked me the most this week, I really thought Georgia Southern was going to show up.
So did I.
Either, and I mean, LSU, holy smokes. Five passing touchdowns.
First of all, that's a pretty glaring offensive or defensive weakness for the Eagles. Second of all, just yikes.
I don't think you can go back 10 years and find a quarterback that threw five touchdown passes in one game for LSU.
No.
That's scary. He
threw for five. Probably Jamarcus Russell.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But Georgia Southern, just a bad game all around. 98 total yards.
For Georgia Southern.
98. Oh my.
All right, guys. Guys, we're going to have to sit down, Eagles. You know how we said do the thing you're best at and just continue to do it? When the only thing you do is the option, consider just changing it
Think
up
about
a
this.
Little bit.
They had 98 total yards, and they had the ball for 28 minutes. 98 total yards.
And they had the ball for almost half the game.
Yes.
Like, they lost time of possession there. Mm-hmm. But that's not as big a deal mm-hmm. as... How many rushing attempts did they have?
39.
39. How many passes did they throw?
11.
Mm.
They ran 50 plays.
How?
50 plays, 28 minutes.
Georgia State had 50 rushing plays.
Yeah.
And Georgia Southern only had 50 plays total. What yep. kind of world are we living in right now?
LSU ran 72 plays. And had 472 yards of offense.
That's over 60 yards of play.
Yeah. Just uncharacteristic. Well, 8 first downs. They were 1 of 12 on third down. There's your answer. You're not extending drives. That's why you only had 50 plays.
You know what? Total. You know what? All right.
So it was a rough game for Georgia Southern.
That's a lot of negativity.
Yeah, just a rough game. And I think Shai Wirtz got hurt actually in the game as well.
Really?
So that's going to be something to look at. Yeah, Shai Wirtz literally 1 of 3 on attempts. He only had 6 rushing attempts. I don't think Shai Wirtz made it out of the first half. And when you take him out of the equation, that's a huge, huge part. So Shai Wirtz being hurt, we'll see how he goes. I think it was a shoulder injury. He's listed as day-to-day. But we'll see how he what he suits up for this week. But that was, Georgia State, shocking. Georgia Southern losing 55-3. I also thought their defense was going to be a lot better. Their defense got torched, I mean, all night long. Vindor, I mean, the guy, their corners were supposed to be great. That was a shocking game. So
let's move it from something negative to something positive. Our... Been on Sports Hustle Award
the
week.
The Hustle Awards.
I mean, obviously, it's got to go to Georgia State.
It does go
like,
to Georgia
State. There's no other option this week. However, we're going to give some runner-up prizes because the whole team deserves it. The whole team is just... They did a great job on Saturday. But there are other players in the Sun Belt who did well, and we want to recognize them as well. Do you want to go first?
You
I can go first.
You can go first.
I'll go first. Yeah. So what I'll do is I'm going to go to a team that actually lost. Okay. I'm going to go to Arkansas State.
Shocking.
I'm going to go to the wide receiving core, and there's really 3 potential candidates here because three of the top four receivers in the Sun Belt right now are all from Arkansas State.
No way.
The number one, Bowling, I don't know his first name, had 12 receptions. Jonathan Adams from Arkansas State had 8 receptions. But the guy I'm going with,
okay,
Omar Bayless.
Omar, yeah.
Omar Bayless.
Heard a lot about him.
10 receptions, 132 yards. Wait for it. 4 touchdowns. One wide receiver had 4 touchdowns.
So he was the only guy who could score against SMU.
He's the only guy who scored against SMU. Well, Logan Bonner counts because he threw for 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, but they only scored 30 points.
But Omar Bayless.
Lord have mercy.
Right?
Wow.
That man hustled up and down the field.
Jeez.
I'm not trying to take away from his other teammates in the receiving corps because obviously they did as much receiving as anybody else.
Yeah.
Arkansas State was torching them on offense.
Good night.
Passing.
Wow.
But Omar Bayless got into the end zone 4 times. That's a school record, and that's why he's getting my hustle award for the week.
That's a hell of an award. You know, you gave it a player. I know we gave it to Georgia State, but and I'm going to go out.
Go for it.
I'm going to go outside the Sun Belt.
Do it.
But I'm going to stay inside the G5, and I got to go to the Mountain West because the Mountain West put the G5 on their back this weekend. I mean, you put the team on the back.
Yeah.
That's what they did.
I mean, Georgia State carried the weight, but
the Mountain West had 4 Power 5 wins in one weekend over 4 different conferences and could have had a 5th if Wake Forest doesn't score in the last minute of the game against Utah State. Wake Forest won that game 38-35. That was literally, that could have been their 5th win. Shout out Nevada, Boise State, Wyoming, and Hawaii all had wins over Power 5 schools.
Hawaii beat Arizona.
Pac-12.
Boise State beat Florida State.
ACC.
Wyoming beat Missouri.
SEC.
Who was the other one?
Nevada.
Nevada
on
beat
Friday night.
Purdue.
And once again, congratulations to that kid. That was probably one of the coolest celebrations I've ever seen when a kicker, freshman, literally wins the game, celebration in the locker room. Coach says, game ball, and guess what? You're on scholarship. Like, what a way to get a scholarship.
And, you know, you were talking about last week, you were saying, you know, we didn't see any of those.
Mm-mm.
We saw it last week when the kicker made a game-winning field goal over Purdue. You deserved it, buddy.
Oh, yeah, you do. So, my hustle award, Mountain West, that's what the Group of Five needs. We need a conference, if it's the Sun Belt, if it's the AAC, if it's the Conference USA, we need a conference that goes out there and just puts it up and makes the Power Five shut up, to be honest with you. And you got 4 teams that did that. And mind you, Wyoming was at home. Hawaii was at home. Boise State was on the road. Nevada was at home. So they had a little home cooking, which that was good. So
but
home fans. But either way, you got to go out and win. And they did that. Hustle Award Mountain West for this first week.
I dig it. Utah State, don't feel too bad. Let it be known that you can lose to Wake Forest and still be a very powerful Group of Five team.
Oh, yeah.
Just talk to our friends at Appalachian State.
We will hear about Utah State in the later part of this year.
They were a great surprise last year.
Oh, yeah. They still have that quarterback who's still good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I circled him last year. I remember talking about him.
Yeah.
I liked him. And I'm glad to be right about that. But they're going to be pretty good this year. If they can win that Mountain West, they're probably going to take that G5 spot.
Yeah, they still have Jordan Love on their team. They're still good.
Yeah, they're solid.
So
probably the best Utah State player for a long time.
Yeah, in a while. So that's my hustle award of the week. So
I dig it.
Yeah.
All right. So now let's shift focus a little bit right now to this week. We've got our hashtag Know Your Enemy game of the week. And this week, we're going to Lawrence, Kansas to follow the Chanticleers up against the Jayhawks. It's the Battle of the Birds.
Know Your Enemy.
That's right. The Battle of the Birds. One set of birds, they're dodging hurricanes. The other one's dodging L's because they got less miles now on the field. That's right. We're talking Kansas and Coastal Carolina. First ever matchup between the two teams. Let's get into it. And now we are joined in by Joe Cashin, the play-by-play, the voice of Coastal Carolina football. And Joe, first of all, thank you for coming in tonight. Obviously it's been a busy week for you, and for a lot of reasons. I understand are you getting ready to head on out to Lawrence, Kansas, or when are you going to be headed out?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. This ought to be a lot of fun. I am actually going to travel separately from the team on Friday afternoon. I have a 4 o'clock flight out of Columbia, and then through Atlanta and on to Kansas City. So the team, of course, is they had to evacuate the school and get out of town, and they went to the upstate, and so they will be traveling out there. I'm not sure what their schedule is, but they'll be flying out of Greenville, South Carolina. But I'll be out there hopefully sometime around 8 o'clock on Friday night.
You know, this is year two of, I guess, having to deal with kind of a circumstance as natural, you know, natural disaster as a hurricane. You know, last year, you know, you guys were on the road for, I think, two or three straight weeks. Does it give the team, I guess, some experience in a situation like this?
There's no question about that, because last year was just, that was like the Odyssey, really. I mean, after we played our second game of the year, our home opener, we had to, all of a sudden, the next day, essentially pack up and leave campus because Hurricane Florence was barreling in and they cleared campus out. And so our guys, our program went up into North Carolina up to play Campbell University, who was supposed to come play us on the following Saturday. Well, we went up there and played them on a Wednesday afternoon. You know, about 3 days of rest and then play football. You know, we won the game. And then from there, we went down to Jacksonville, Florida and places, you know, down around that area and stayed that week. And then we flew to Louisiana from there to play the Raging Cajuns. And we won that game. That was one of the best games we played all year. You know, and then after that we came back to the Grand Strand area, but we still couldn't get on campus, and so we had to practice and stay at a local hotel and practice at a local high school, and then it was back out to Troy the next week, and of course, you know, that was, you know, they are who they are. I mean, I didn't think we played poorly. We just ran into a much better team. You know, had some things go against us in the second half. And we came through that 3-2, those first five games, 3-2. We weren't too bad. But I think at the end of the day in November, I think it kind of we felt that. I think the effects of all of that, of being out of rhythm, out of routine, and, you know, all that travel and all that uncertainty, you know, I think it kind of caught up to us. But here we are yet again, you know, off campus somewhere else. We're practicing in all these places. We were at, you know, Clemson's indoor facility yesterday. We were, you know, practiced at Furman today. And, you know, hopefully this, you know, the Dorian thing won't be too terribly bad and we can get back into campus quicker and get back into routine. But we'll see.
You know, you've been covering them for probably over a decade right now at this point. You know, does it shock you? Does it surprise you to see schools like, you know, Clemson, the Furmans? You know, you had told me earlier there was high schools down in Florida that they kind of go out of their way, but they kind of extend an open hand to you guys when stuff goes on like this.
I don't think it shocks me because I think that, you know, our coaching staff is a pretty tight fraternity, and you have friends and yeah, you're competing against one another on the field for recruits and this, that, and the other thing. But I think when there's, you know, when you see somebody in a time of need, you're going to go out of your way, hopefully, to try to help them out. And I would like to think that our guys would do the same thing for, you know, another program. Let's say they had to come to the coast for whatever reason and they needed some facilities. I would like to think that we would do the same thing. So I don't think it necessarily shocks me. I mean, and our head coach, Jamie Chadwell, is pretty well connected here in the state of South Carolina, and, you know, I think it's a great thing that coaches can work with each other and help each other out in a time like this.
All right, well, let's get to talking some football here. You know, we're into week two, week one here. Obviously, you guys played a pretty decent, I mean, a pretty strong Eastern Michigan squad. They had a good bit of their core from last year's team come back. You guys, I'm looking at your stats, and, you know, almost 400 yards of offense and four turnovers. I mean, was turnovers pretty much the story of that game, of what happened kind of last week?
Turnovers hurt. That was one of the things that certainly hurt our effort to try to win the game. I think a bigger thing was, even though we had almost 400 yards of total offense, we only rushed for 74. And if we're not going to rush the ball successfully, and this will be true on Saturday night at KU, if we can't run the ball successfully, we're not going to win. I mean, Jamie Chadwell's offense really is kind of designed on a good mix of run and pass, close to 50-50. Our first drive of the game, we went 75 yards, five rushes, five passes. And that was as good a balance as we got all day. You know, we lost our last four games of last season, and we rushed for less than 100 yards in three of those games, and we did it again on Saturday. We got to be able to run the football. And, of course, obviously, yeah, the turnovers hurt. We had one, you know, where a defensive lineman stuck his hand up in the passing lane and batted it up and made a, I mean, I'm like, we're like, how did he do that? How did that kid just do that? you know, and then, you know, we threw two jump balls that, you know, one at the end of the game that we got picked, and, you know, just had to throw one up to see what would happen. But yeah. I think it was more of the fact that, A, we couldn't run the ball, and then, two, their quarterback, Eastern Michigan's quarterback, was 20 of 22 in the game. I mean, and one of those incompletions he had right on the money, and our DB just separated the guy from the football. I mean, just popped him. Yeah. You know, it was right there. So, I mean, that kid was good. You know, that and so, I mean, we didn't play poorly, I didn't think, but that you said it. That was a pretty good Eastern Michigan club. They were a bowl team last year.
Yeah. I mean, you guys held him underneath 300 yards. So I'm looking. I mean, that's solid defensive stats. I mean, that seems to me that a formula of, okay, we got 400, we held him under 300. It's just you go and you look at those turnovers, and that was the first thing, and then some penalties as well. So is that something that you've seen? I know Chadwell's only in his second season. Has that been a problem in the past? Is penalties and turnovers, or is that kind of an uncharacteristic, you know, part of the game?
Well, the turnover factor, I would say yes, because we were -6 last year in the turnover margin. But penalties, that was a surprising thing for me to see. Last season, in 10 of our 12 games, we committed fewer penalties than our opponents. But that certainly wasn't the case the other day. I mean, every time we turned around, we got something that you know, hurt us, a holding call or a procedure penalty or something like this. You know, it was just something that, you know, would stagnate a drive and then short circuit a drive in a hurry. And, you know, that really hurt us, obviously, with the turnovers too. And then we also had a special teams mess up where we had a 12-yard punt deep in our own end. And that, they had a short field, a 38-yard field to work with. And in a one-score game, that's crucial. You know, you start looking at little things, a play here, a play there, in a one-score game. Mm-hmm. You know, and then that kind of stuff, that kind of stuff can just kill you.
Yeah. So, I mean, going into Lawrence, taking on a coach like Les Miles, and obviously Kansas has been what Kansas has been for the past probably decade now, and it seems like there's a lot of energy around Kansas's program. You know, how do you go into a game? You know, what do you think? How do you think Coastal is approaching a game like this with a team that isn't necessarily your powerhouse Power Five, but they have a really good coach at the helm now?
I think we approach it in the way that Jamie wants to control the ball and control the game. I think that and I really haven't had much of a chance to talk to him this week, but I would imagine that he wants to possess the ball. When we're successful, and I'll go back to what I said a few minutes ago, when we're successful, we're going to possess the ball and run a lot more plays than our opponents and keep them off the field and work that time of possession up around 34, 35 minutes. You know, keep these other guys off the field. We almost beat Arkansas with this 2 years ago. I mean, we lost that game and we should have won it. We should have won in Fayetteville 2 years ago, lost by a point. You know, I had that game won in the fourth quarter because we were able to control the game in a way that we just couldn't do it the other day, mainly because of turnovers and penalties. If we can cut that kind of stuff out on Saturday against Kansas, I think we got a great shot. I really do. And I don't, you know, I know Les Miles is there, and you said they've got a lot of energy and excitement, and I know that they do because they got a named coach there. You know, they got a guy that's won a national championship, and he's got a pedigree about him. But if we go in there and do the things that we can do, absolutely, we can go in there, be competitive, and win this football game.
You know, we all saw Georgia State this past week beat Tennessee. You know, what type of a is this a program-changing win with a win over if we wake up Sunday and it says Chanticleer's knock off the Jayhawks? Is that what type of win this would be if they can go in there and get the W?
I would hope so. You know, we're 0-7 all time against Power 5 opponents, and the only time we've ever been close, anywhere in the same universe was that Arkansas game. That would have been that kind of game if we could have gone in there and beaten an SEC team. And I know that Kansas is down, and they really haven't done a lot lately, but they're still a Power 5 Big 12 team. And that was a heck of a win by Sean Elliott at Georgia State. I mean, I know Sean. I've known him for 30 years, and I'm so happy for him and those guys to get that win. But, yeah, I think if we can go in there Saturday night, knock off Kansas, that would absolutely be a game changer for us. We can turn the corner and people would go, hey, look at Coastal Carolina. You know, they won the 2016 baseball championship, and they just knocked off Kansas in football.
Yeah. That'd be something else. Who does, I mean, if you're talking to a Kansas fan, who should Kansas be worried about on the offensive side of the ball for Coastal Carolina this coming Saturday?
Offensively, if we're going to be successful and have a good opportunity to win, you know, on that side of the ball, C.J. Marable, our junior running back, has got to have a big game. I mean, he had 49 yards rushing the other day, caught one touchdown pass. But if we've got to get him untracked, because he's a guy that can make plays. He's good in space. You know, he's got speed to burn. He's got good hands coming out of the backfield. If we can get him involved in this thing, get his yardage up, you know, get him, you know, making some big plays, that's the guy that Kansas is going to have to be worried about, in my opinion.
I got you. And I know you're a little biased here, but do you have any predictions for this weekend? Do you make predictions? I guess that would be the first question. And then if you do you have any predictions?
See, I got asked this question yesterday. I'm a little leery of making predictions. What I will tell you is, reiterate what I've already said. We control the ball. We control the clock. We don't turn it over. We don't make many penalties. We'll win the football game. That's what I'll tell you. I think that we have more control over this game maybe than some other people think. I mean, a lot of times you can go into these kind of games and do all that kind of thing against the Power Five and still get beat 55-10 or something like that. I don't think that's the case Saturday night. I think if we go play our game, we'll win.
Well, Joe, well, thank you for coming on the show tonight. You know, it's been safe travels. We hope everybody stays safe in South Carolina. And two, hopefully you have some safe travels over there. And I guess enjoy the moment, I guess. I know you've been to a couple of really nice stadiums, but I know, you know, just getting to be in the same stadium as a national championship coach is pretty fun every now and then. So, but again, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed it, and we will enjoy the moment on Saturday night. Win, lose, or draw, it's going to be fun.
Again, that was Joe Cashin with play-by-play guy for Coastal Carolina. Special thanks for him to coming on. I love what he said about controlling the game and running the ball, because we've been pounding on that and repeating that and harping on that for the past week or so about how to get Power Five upsets, and that's how you're supposed to do it. That's what you're going to have to do if you want to upset, win against a Power Five team. It's what Georgia State did. It's what Coastal Carolina is going to have to do. And, I mean, that's just how you play the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how we talked about it. I mean, it's kind of fundamental. You don't turn over the ball. You hang on to the ball. You win time possession. Then you're going to have a good chance.
And, I mean, another thing, what he said specifically, time of possession is a big deal. But running the ball as much as you can and controlling the clock, controlling the time of possession, those things go hand to hand. And I don't think we necessarily, like, explain what that is so much, but when you're running the ball, and I think we might have even said this last week, but the point is, when you run the ball, you are siphoning the clock. You can make it speed up, you can drain it, or you can stop it with short runs to the outside, picking up first downs, whatever, however you want to put it. But you just have to do the little things right. And you said it's fundamentals. You're right. It goes back to no turnovers. Georgia State won the turnover battle. If you don't make any mistakes, then you're pretty good. You're pretty good. You're pretty kosher.
I mean, I think the biggest thing is he talked about earlier, and we talked about before the interview, is that they're dodging hurricanes. And I don't think this is anything new for them. Like, obviously, you heard him. They were on the road for like 5 weeks straight last year. This ain't nothing new. Hopefully, this year, they don't have to go through the same thing. God forbid. But this team has been through adversity. I think last year they were so close to getting a bowl, and our good friends at South Alabama decided to ruin that. But you know, this team's so close, and I feel like, you know, Jamie Chadwell, they really need to get their running game fixed. This is a team that that's what you expected. You expected them to get 200 yards every game last year, 180, 200 yards every game. They cannot be only getting 74 yards, 75 yards of rushing a game. They won't win a game this year if they don't do that. Like, their offense is predicated on being able to run the ball with a stable of running backs, not just one guy. I know he talked about Maribel. He's a big time, but you got to have more than that. And your quarterback's got to be able to run too. And he just didn't do that at all.
Just put this into perspective. Georgia Southern is tied with Coastal Carolina for eighth right now in rushing offense. Both teams rushed for 74 yards last game. You're not going to win many games doing that.
Those are two programs that have to run the ball in order to be successful. They've got to run the ball. And if they're struggling to do that against Eastern Michigan, they're going to be struggling against a lot of defenses, the exception of probably Louisiana. No shade. But with the, I mean, they're going to struggle this year. If they can't get to 150 yards rushing, they're going to struggle a lot this year. So that's the biggest thing that I want to see them. I want to see. I don't care if they lose to Kansas. I want to see 200 yards rushing. I want to see downhill running with a quarterback that makes a defense have to really respect you and not just throwing the ball. Because, I mean, he threw for, what, 200-300 yards in last week's game, I'm pretty sure. Or he was close to 300 yards. But that's not what their offense is designed to do. That's just not how it's supposed to be. So they've definitely got to get to at least 180 yards rushing, maybe 200, and probably two touchdowns on the ground if they're going to want to win this game.
340 yards passing from Peyton, two touchdowns, excuse me, and the long of 43.
And how many interceptions did he have?
Four.
There you go.
That was a big deal in that game, but, you know, could be a different game.
He said one of the interceptions was late in the game, so, and they were trying to score like late in the game. They were like kind of Hail Mary-ish. I mean, it's simple, man.
The little things, the fundamentals.
Yeah, and you got to run the ball. This team has to run the ball, so.
All right, well, let's go to the other sideline, and let's see what that other team, the Jayhawks, have to say and what they're looking like right now.
All right, and now we have Kansas University, the Jayhawks. We have a 247 beat writer, Scott Chasen, that joins us. Scott, we were talking earlier, you're obviously a KU grad. From your time being a student at KU to now, what's been the biggest change, I guess, in the football program since you were there and now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Les Miles era has extended only one summer and really one game, an FCS game. But I think there's a definite change in interest. You know, when I was at the student paper at the University of Yale at Kansas, I was sports editor, and we had a video reporter go around just asking KU fans if they knew who Kansas football's coach was. And this was the year that David Beatty was hired. And a lot of them could not even name the football coach, couldn't tell you the record of the team last year. They didn't really care. And I think, you know, that's probably not all the way back, but you're starting to see that come back a little bit more with the hiring of Les Miles.
I mean, you obviously we're 6-7 months into Les Miles being there, and we're a week in. What is life, I guess, you know, covering, you know, you're reporting on the practices, you're reporting on Les Miles. They have the show Miles to Go. What is that atmosphere around the football team like?
Yeah, covering it is interesting because you never quite know what you're going to get out of Les Miles. There are days where he likes to keep his cards, you know, kind of close to the vest and just really not say much. But, you know, at times he's also, you know, after the first game was about as animated as I've seen him. And, you know, I asked him a question about their kicker, and he was waiting on the next question after he answered that. So he asked himself a question. It was kind of funny. And he made like a Men in Black reference. He said something, and then he was like, you know what, I'm going to take that back. I'm going to wipe the minds of everyone in the room. So he's still the same wacky Les Miles. He's doing his thing. He talks about eating grass because he gets asked about it in like every press conference and show, and he does and everything.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different, but that's what I'd say. It's Les Miles. It's not, you know, your typical football coach, but at the same time, you know, he's talked a lot about wanting to be a dominant football team, and he's used the word championships about 500 times. So that seems to be a goal as well.
You know, have you noticed? I know it's year one, and year one, you kind of got to take everything with a grain of salt. What have you noticed? You know, yeah, you've only played one game, but have you noticed a difference in that one game yet with this team and kind of the leadership that's over this team?
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. Kansas's previous coach was David Beatty. So this is not meant to be disrespectful to David Beatty, but David Beatty had no grasp on game management in any perspective. He had no grasp on play calling. He had no grasp on third or fourth downs. He couldn't go games without avoiding substitution penalties. So in that regard, yes, it resembles more of a professional football team. And I would say that's kind of, obviously it's college, but you get what I'm saying. Like they know what they're doing in that perspective. So still remains to be seen, you know, Les Miles, the tactician. Does he have a, you know, has he reworked his offensive game? They brought in an analyst in Brent Dierman who wrote a book on RPOs. So, you know, it remains to be seen schematically all they'll do this year. But I will say just from a pure professionalism standpoint, obviously the bar has been raised a little bit, but that has more to do with who KU's previous coach was.
Yeah, I'm looking at – let's get into football. I'm looking at, you know, week one, you play a solid Indiana State team that has a, I mean, I did some research, Ryan Boyle. I mean, he wasn't just your typical, you know, FCS quarterback. He, you know, an Iowa transfer. And I'm looking at the stats, and they're outgaining you. And what was it? Was it a sloppy game? Because the stats, I mean, you look down and you're saying, okay, how does the team that outgains and has less turnovers lose this ball game?
Yeah, you have to take some of it in context, because one of the turnovers was a fourth down attempt where the quarterback fumbled the snap. Another was a turnover in plus territory. There were also missed field goals by both teams. And one of the turnovers, again by KU, actually resulted in a touchdown for Indiana State. I would say this. If you watch that game, you go back and watch, KU pretty much led for the entirety, except for a moment when they had a bad turnover, gave up the lead right at the end before they marched down the field and won the game. So they pretty much were in control or had the lead for a large part of the game. The secondary played pretty well, I would say. They had two interceptions. But outside of that, I would call it a sloppy performance. Kansas's wide receivers looked really good. Their linebackers, which many thought might be a weakness of this team, they actually looked pretty good. But the defensive line was a question mark. The right side of the offensive line was a question mark. Quarterback play, honestly, a question mark. Even though Carter Stanley had decent numbers, he did have three fumbles. Or he was involved with three fumbles, I should say. One of them wasn't credited to him. And, so you get a little bit of a mixed bag coming out of that game, but that's also obviously without the best player on Kansas in Puka Williams and, you know, a guy who was a preseason first team All-Big 12 guy.
Mm-hmm. Is there, and I mean, for people that don't know, I mean, because we have a lot of Sun Belt, and so they, Puka Williams' name might not be, you know, a household name over here. You know, obviously, is he still serving? Is he still expected to be out for, I guess, an indefinite amount of time? Or what is his case?
So he's back. He was, due to a domestic battery charge in December, he was suspended from all team activities for about 7 months. And then he had kind of a list of sanctions and punishments. I believe athletic director Jeff Warren made the ultimate call for him to be suspended for one game for that first game. For anyone who doesn't know Puka Williams, he rushed for 250 yards in a game against Oklahoma last year. He also threw a touchdown pass in that. I want to say two rushing touchdowns in that game. He's a dynamic rusher, receiving threat. He's little, but he runs with power. He had over 1,000 rushing yards in 11 games last year. He was first-team All-Big 12 at two different positions. Preseason first-team All-Big 12 again. He is one of the most dynamic players in the Big 12 Conference. Obviously, you know, you're not talking about a Heisman guy. He's not Jalen Hurts or anything like that. But, no, he's an incredibly dynamic running back. He averaged 7 yards a carry last year and rushed for 1,100 yards. And to do that with Kansas football's offensive line and no threat of a passing game, I think that tells you pretty much everything you need to know about him.
I might have missed this when you were talking about, is there a chance, is he going to be available this week? Is that what you were saying?
Yes, okay. he's fully back. He has rejoined the team. He will be starting. He will be playing in Les Miles. That there's no limitations on how he will be used. Okay.
So I mean, I was going to ask you a question, but he kind of sounds like the answer of if Kansas were to win this game, who's going to have to stand out? And it kind of sounds like Puka Williams. Is there somebody else, or is he the guy?
Yeah, I would say he's probably the guy, but they need better quarterback play. Carter Stanley threw, I think, two touchdowns in the opener, but the fact of the matter is, you know, he put balls in jeopardy. There was one that was tipped up by a defensive back and then fell into the hands of a KU receiver. He had two other throws that I counted, at least, that could have very easily been intercepted without a great play from the defense, a pretty routine play, or just going against better players would lead to an interception. And then he had two fumbles that were credited to him, and the third was a backward pass that the running back got both hands on, but it was an inaccurate pass, so you would still kind of want to see more there. So I think Carter Stanley has to step up and play a better game. He actually won the quarterback battle in camp, so they'll be looking for more from him. Obviously, last drive of the last game, he marched him down the field and got the game-winning touchdown. So that might give him some confidence. And, yeah, Puka Williams is, I would say, paramount for this team. He is, by himself, a game-changer. So if he gets going, Kansas's offense will be a lot harder to stop than it would otherwise.
Yeah, when you see a team like Coastal Carolina, and it's a group of five school, what's kind of the mindset for people that have followed KU? Is it a win game? Like, is it a, okay, we checked this off, or or, you know, because obviously the Group of Five talent, in my opinion, I don't know if you have the same opinion, but it's gotten better over the past, you know, 7 to 8 years. And is it when you have a Coastal Carolina team coming in, obviously they're coming in off a loss, but what's kind of your mindset going into a game like this for Kansas?
Yeah, well, I think the fans and players, and I think even media recognize now, like, there's no guarantee win game for Kansas at all. I mean, I think back to, I think it was the Central Michigan game a couple years ago that was the first time KU had been favored in the David Beatty era, and they lost by 18, and that game was not that close. That was a game that they very easily could have and probably should have lost by more. I think they maybe even scored a touchdown late to make the score closer than it otherwise would have looked. But
yeah.
I don't think KU fans or anyone really takes things for granted like that. I will say, to your point, I think not only the breadth of talent nationally has gotten better, like not only Group of Five, FCS, everything. Like, I think coaching, mm-hmm. I think people have gotten smarter. I think strategy is more widespread understood and more accessible to everyone. So I would agree with your point. I would say that I think talent levels have improved, and I think coaching and everything across the board has helped and has gone with that too. So the mindset probably isn't that, you know, Kansas is really not going to take anyone lightly. They're going to expect, you know, to play a team that might be close to as good as they are, even if it's not a Big 12 school.
So, you know, we asked this question to each side, you know, Sunday morning, the paper, you know, 247 websites, they say Kansas, you know, Jayhawks win. What's going to have to happen for the Jayhawks to win on Saturday night?
Yeah, I think just controlling the time of possession would be a big deal. Les Miles kind of mentioned that on his coach's show, and giving the ball to the running backs, letting them make plays, and really not trying to force it, because when Puka Williams plays, Kansas has a talented offense to put points up on anybody. I mean, they hung 40 on, granted, not a great Oklahoma defense, but, you know, they still put 40 up on him, and that was a team that I believe made the college football playoff. You might have to check me on that. It's but regardless, like, yeah, this is a high-powered or a running back who works in an offense that's not especially elite. So if they can kind of manage the game through him, let Puka Williams make what Les Miles calls Puka plays. It's funny. I feel like I'm talking about him a lot, but I cannot overstate that, like, last year, he was pretty much their best running option, their best receiving option. And, again, he threw a touchdown pass. Like, he literally does everything. He also returns kicks and punts. So, like,
he can do everything.
He is the Kansas game fan. So, yeah, four-star freshman out of Louisiana, good program there. And now it looks like they've got a little bit of maybe a little bit better talent around him. Although, again, the quarterback spot, yeah, that's the question.
And this is my final question. This is going back to the Indiana State game. But how easy was it to write, I guess, a pun, a headline for the opening pick six of the game when you got a guy with the last name of Defense that literally picked? I mean, what was that like trying to write that?
Yeah, well, it's funny because Hassan Defense, when he first came to Kansas, was not the best defender. He actually really struggled at cornerback, and it was one of those things where the pun was there for the taking, and yeah, he really struggled. He got moved to safety last year, his junior playing season, really excelled. Kansas finished top five nationally in takeaways and turnover margin. Now he's back at cornerback, and there were some questions as to how well he'd play. He's better in zone than man-to-man coverage. But yes, when Defense comes away with the first score of the season and it is a defensive touchdown, the jokes write themselves. And yeah, they'll be looking for that kind of defense once again.
For sure. Well, Scott, well, thank you for coming on the show tonight. We really enjoyed, you know, learning. There's a lot of our listeners, they aren't, you know, we get a lot of South, you know, a lot of listeners in the South, so they aren't big KU guys. So we're really, really lucky to have you come on the show tonight, but thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's kind of funny and it, even us reporters, even us, the guys who cover play-by-play guys, even we kind of know there's like three things that a team has to do: ball control, limiting turnovers, time of possession. And even he played into that. But what I really liked about him is, and to be honest with you, I forgot that Puka Williams didn't play that first week. Puka Williams is a game changer. Like, the kid is a highlight reel. Every time he touches the ball, you're thinking this kid's going to take it 75 yards for a touchdown. And unfortunately for Coastal Carolina, they're going to get him in his first game back, and he's going to be fresh. And that is that should be worrisome for Coastal Carolina. But he definitely, I think, is the key to Kansas this year, because they just don't have enough playmakers. It's really him. They've gotten more kids, obviously, but it's going to be Puka. I think it's going to be the Puka Williams show.
Is it similar to, and I'm asking you this because you know more about Puka than I do, is it a similar situation to Penny Hart on Georgia State? Or is this more of a...
I think he's even more of a game changer than that.
Well, yeah. Probably more amplified than that.
Yeah.
But
I don't think the offense runs through him, if that's what you're saying.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
He even kind of talked about it. He would go out and catch. I mean, he did everything.
Right.
But I still think obviously they were able to do some things last week. But I think he gives them a whole nother avenue of being able to score on teams, which thus opens up other guys. Now, yeah, Penny Hart was kind of like that, but he's on a different level than Penny Hart. I mean, this kid's just that good.
Right.
Like he is that good of a player. And so that's why I think he's going to be a huge X factor.
Well, I think everybody's going to circle him. And I think that kind of leads to the very next thought is, what are they going to do to compensate should Coastal Carolina shut him down some way? Because, I mean, if they stick two guys on him, you still got nine guys on the field. You still have enough to overrun the rest of them. But I like what Scott was saying about how they need better quarterback play.
Mm-hmm.
He, what was it, four turnovers, four interceptions or something like that?
He had three. There was three fumbles.
Three fumbles.
And
that's
he
what
had
I'm
his hand
of.
In every single one of them.
Right.
The quarterback did.
The quarterback.
So
they need fewer turnovers from the quarterback, and they need him to do a better job just in his position. So I'm looking at that saying, Coastal's probably going to have their hands full with Puka as it is. If this guy steps up, there's no real chance for Coastal, I don't feel like, offensively versus their defense.
Oh, no. I mean, especially when you got a guy named Defense on your team. It's pretty hard to beat him.
You love that, don't you?
Ha, love it. Dude, that's great. Defense with the pick? Who? Oh, it's one guy. Bam. There you go.
He is their entire defense.
He is.
So, all right. Well, let's... I think we've looked at it enough. I think we've turned it over... Turn the box over, shaking it a bit. We know what's inside. We don't know what's... Obviously, if Georgia State can beat Tennessee, we don't know what's coming.
Anything can happen this year, boys.
But you know what? Let's put our necks on the line and have our best bets.
Best bets.
Yeah, I mean, game of the week, Coastal, Kansas. Let's get right to it. This is kind of a tougher one, I think. If Coastal would have won last week and would have really shown that they could run the ball, I'd have more of a challenge of picking this game. But if you aren't going to be able to run the ball in Eastern Michigan, Les Miles, he's always had decent defenses. And I know it's first week, but they've got to be able to run the ball, and I just don't think they'll be able to do that on Kansas, to be honest with you. And what's our Twitter poll?
The Kansas, the fan vote, excuse me, I may as well just go ahead and say it. It's Kansas. But here's the thing. Only 53% have voted for Kansas.
It's tight, isn't it?
It's tight.
Yeah.
Which I really don't feel like it's as tight, and I hate this, but I really don't feel like it's as tight as we would like.
Yeah, FBI, the Power Index, ESPN's 64% to Kansas.
But that's inside your range of
upset.
That's
what I was about to get to. If the listeners that have been following us, between 20 and that 40 range, that's where you got to worry that you're like, oh, this is not going to be a good game. And they're right there, smack dab, 35%. So they're right in that middle. Their spread, Kansas, 8-point favorite. So this is what I'm going with. I'm going to go... Kansas is going to win this game. But I think Coastal covers. I think they keep it close. If they can run the ball, but I'll go back to X Factor, Puka Williams is going to be in this ball game.
Absolutely.
And a fresh Puka Williams. And it's at home. It's on the it's on the road for Coastal Carolina. And I mean,
if Puka can pick up 100 all-purpose yards, then there's no chance.
Oh, dude. He'll pick up. I mean, he's kick return. He'll pick up 200 all-purpose. I'll put that down right now. I mean, 200 all-purpose yards for sure. I'm going to go with Kansas in this one. And I think Les Miles, the Mad Hatter. Hopefully we get to see him eat some grass this week just to see.
Yeah,
he's like every press conference, people ask him, have you ate grass this morning? Well, obviously he has. He does it every day.
Like, that's his thing. Don't ask.
So, less is more. Yeah, I'm going to go KU on this one.
All right, so am I. I really don't. I love Coastal, and again, I would love it if Coastal pulled the upset, but I just don't see it happening. Let's keep going. Move a little bit further, a little bit closer east, but not completely. You know what? No, I'm wrong because it's in Nevada. Let's go further west. Arkansas State at UNLV. This game is on Facebook.
Oh, it's the Facebook game.
It's the Facebook game.
Wow.
So I don't remember. I think that the last time a Sun Belt game was aired on Facebook exclusively was the Arizona Bowl in 2016 when South Alabama played Air Force. I was just kidding.
It was on Twitter.
Okay.
Well, there's, you know, there obviously there's a lot of live sports that is being tested on social media, just putting it right through the big social media platforms, mm-hmm. which is Facebook, Twitter, and as we heard from our audience, South Alabama was they were on Twitter, one of the first, I think, college football bowl games, first one ever to go straight through social media. So it's interesting. I mean, that's going to be very interesting to see like kind of how you like rate that. Like, you know, obviously, I'm sure Facebook's got some sort of algorithm that they can put a rating out for it. And just to see who it reaches. I mean, because that's going to, you know, Facebook's going to put that. I mean, that those ads pop up out of nowhere when you start talking about them.
They're definitely
going to have that game like front and center.
The only upside is instead of those Nissan commercials that drive me bonkers, I'm going to get ads for targeted shirts that say, I'm a Troy fan. I was born in May and don't mess with me.
Yep, that's about it. And you're going to get Farmville.
Farmville, of course.
FBI, I guess stats or I guess predictions. UNLV 57. So this is really? Kind of a toss up. 57-42 in favor of UNLV. UNLV won last week.
56-23 over Southern Utah.
Yeah, I mean Southern Utah is I think a Division II school. I don't even think they're FCS yet.
They are FCS. They wouldn't be playing, but they wouldn't be playing UNLV.
Oh, I guess
they're
a younger FCS because I know that there's a they are FCS, but they last year Southern Utah lost to a Division II school. That's what it was. They lost to Northern Arizona. UNLV definitely didn't have the test that Arkansas State did in their first week. Logan Bonner was everything what everybody thought he was going to be. 32 mm-hmm. of 50, 324 yards, 4 TDs, a touchdown. Obviously, you highlighted Mr. Bayless, who had 4 touchdowns. It'd be nice to see him throw the ball to, you know,
right.
other guys for touchdowns. I mean,
well, you know what?
He was doing that.
He was. He was throwing it to other guys. He wasn't necessarily throwing it to him for touchdowns. But Omar Bayless was making them touchdowns.
Yeah.
And number two, you get Dahu Green back this week. So that's going to be another important weapon for them.
Yeah.
What about Marcus Mosley? Like, I mean, he's still there. He's a great back.
Marcel Murray. Is that what you're talking about?
Yep. Butchered his name. No. I sincerely apologize.
It's okay. Marcel Murray. Yeah, he's still there. 17 carries, 77 yards for the first week. I mean, that's not bad run. It's not a bad stat. 75, no. 80 yards, 17 carries. That's not terrible. You'd obviously like to see him get over the 100 yard mark. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to have to do that this week.
Yep.
I mean, UNLV, their defense, I mean, yeah, it's only one game, but their defense only giving up 46 yards. Yes, they're playing Southern Utah. Southern Utah is not a running team. So I think this will be a lot different game for UNLV.
Oh, absolutely.
On
the one hand, Arkansas State was tested by a much better team. On the other hand, UNLV basically got a lap running start. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now the spread is interesting. The spread, UNLV is a 1.5-point favorite. So even Vegas... Even Vegas is like, all right, I mean, that's basically a 50-50 throw up right there. That's almost a push.
Yeah, because you get 3 points for being at home.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's going to be interesting. I think X Factor, Logan Bonner. I think if Logan Bonner can do what he did last week and you get a little bit of help from Marcel Murray, I think they win this one. And I think they cover, obviously. I think they cover easily.
Arkansas State.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Arkansas State on this one.
I'm going to stick with you on that one. The fan vote is pretty similar to the FBI in the other direction. Arkansas State, 60%. It's another toss-up. I actually feel like this is more of a toss-up than the Kansas-Coastal Carolina game. But you know what? I'm going to stick with the Sun Belt team and say Arkansas State is hungry. They're going to come back swinging in week two, and they're going to be 1-1 by next Sunday. All right, now let's head back to Tallahassee. We were in Tallahassee last week just by coincidence.
Yeah.
You know, we said that.
Got really lucky.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be in Jacksonville, but Hurricane Dorian pushed it to Tallahassee. Thankfully, that was the most that any game was affected last week. And, you know, at this point last year, we had like three or four games canceled. So we got ULM in Florida State at Tallahassee. Might be getting some rain from Dorian for real this time. ULM, who'd they play, Grambling? They didn't impress me.
No.
Not stat-wise.
Caleb Evans didn't impress me. But Josh Johnson did.
Yes.
Josh Johnson, who, God, I know like eight Josh Johnsons for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
One's a meteorologist. One's an accountant.
One played wide receiver, Troy.
One played one. That was John Johnson.
Dang it.
It's okay.
I'm just getting names wrong today. Okay. That's what it is.
But Josh Johnson, I mean, okay, we didn't talk about B.J. Smith. B.J. Smith had a heck of a game. He had 10 carries for like 130-something yards.
Yep.
Josh Johnson had 10 carries for 173 yards.
17 yards a carry.
17 yards a carry. And he had two touchdowns. Josh Johnson had a heck of a game. That's what you want to see. I mean, that is not that that is low on the carry toll, which is great, and high on the volume of yards gained. And but you're playing Florida State. You were playing Grambling last week. This week you're playing Florida State that has five-star prospects all over the place. Caleb Evans has got to be an X factor. 19 of 25 for only 183 yards. Granted, yeah, you put up 500 yards of offense on Grambling, but again, here this is the stat, and yeah, that game was 31-9. They gave up 407 yards of offense to Grambling, that UML.
To Grambling.
They gave up 243 yards of rushing and 164 passing.
To Grambling.
To Grambling.
I mean, nothing against Grambling, but...
You ain't no Florida State.
No.
Florida State fell apart last week against Boise State. I don't see Florida State doing that this week.
Uh-uh.
And... But Caleb Evans, I really hope Caleb Evans has a game. Now, granted, Hank Burkmeyer or whatever his name is for Boise State, he threw 400 yards in Florida State last week.
I can see Caleb doing that.
I can see Caleb doing something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think it happens to Florida State 2 weeks in a row. And ULM's defense, because Florida State has a guy by the name of Cam Akers, who was the number one running back coming out of high school about 2 years ago. He's in his sophomore season, maybe junior season now. He's there. I mean, they're loaded. And... You've got to have a defense, and that's what Boise State did. Boise State locked down in the second half. I don't think ULM has that capability, especially after seeing what they did. Yeah, they only gave up 9 points to Grambling, but if you're going to give up 400 yards of offense, that's not going to work when you play a team. Now, granted, Florida State, they gave up 600 yards of offense last week, but you're also playing Boise State. So, way different style of competition. So, I'm going to go with Florida State. The spread is 21. I think ULM covers the spread. I think they're a 2-touchdown loss. I don't think they'll get blown up by 21.
I'm getting the feeling that this is kind of a trend here, is that Sun Belt teams play up, punch above their weight, and cover the spread.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it in South. We saw it in Louisiana last week. Probably might see it in Coastal.
We saw it in Georgia State.
We definitely saw it with Georgia State. But I think I like what you said there. I just don't think ULM is going to meet that mark this week. Florida State all the way. I don't think ULM covers.
Okay.
Interestingly, this is the first time this has happened. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the first time it's ever happened in our fan vote. When I took this down earlier this evening, Florida State and ULM were tied at 50%. So, I mean, we know our audience clearly, the Sun Belt centric.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of impressive.
Yeah.
Some people have some faith in ULM.
There's a lot of faith in ULM.
But
50-50.
Yep.
Wow.
So, I mean, I'm going to stick with it, Florida State. I know we're kind of tied up here with the same picks for the through the first three. But, I mean, you know.
I mean, you did go 5-1 last week. I think I might just try your formula.
That's all right.
For one
That's
week.
All right. Let's head out a little bit further down the Gulf. Let's head down I-10 to Lafayette. It's probably how you get to Lafayette. Somehow from Tallahassee. Liberty is traveling down to Cajun country to take on Louisiana.
Yeah, Liberty's head coach Hugh Freeze, he's no stranger to the Southeast.
Mm-mm.
And but
they know his name in Louisiana.
Right now, I think he's a stranger to the football field.
Yeah.
Because Grant, not trying to make fun of him, he had back surgery.
Right.
Last week, image probably of the month.
Yeah, maybe? Probably.
Was basically the head coach of who did Liberty play? Syracuse.
Syracuse, yep.
Dino Babers came out, tried to meet him at half, you know, gave him a nice thumbs up, you know, and you had a great shot of Hugh Freeze in the press box, not press box, but coaching box.
On a bed.
Like, they gave him a bed, and Louisiana has said, we're going to accommodate anything he needs. If he's doing that, we'll do the same thing. So that's kind of cool that they're looking out for him. And first year, obviously, as Liberty, and we know much about Liberty. They still have the same quarterback in
Stephen Calvert.
Buckshot is also his other name, as we
the Calvert
greatly learned from. And then they also have Gandy Golden. Gandy
is
Golden,
that the wide receiver?
Yep, that is the wide receiver. Yep. But you want to know what? They didn't score any points last week. Syracuse shut him out. Literally 24-0.
That's Syracuse. Syracuse is a sneaky good team.
Dino Babers' defenses are always really good.
Yes.
ULL's defense, not so good. They did not, I mean, literally didn't get any better. I know they're playing Mississippi State, but we even talked about they're giving up 230 yards passing last year, and they gave up 220 yards rushing a game. One game into the season this year, 236 passing, 261 rushing.
Yeah, that's not a change.
There's no improvement there.
There's
almost
none whatsoever.
A loss there. But the good thing is that Liberty had minus 4 yards rushing for the entire game last week. So maybe you get lucky. You hold them to 150 yards. Let's pray. And you get the win. I'm going to go ULL. They're a 13-point favorite. I think they cover. I think their offense is really good. I think they played a really good Mississippi State team last week, and they held with them for most of the game. That game was 14-14 at halftime. Or no, it was 21-14. They scored right at the end of half. Mississippi State did. But I think ULL's offense, I think they run all over them. They still have the three-headed monster. Calais looked really good last week. Regis had a really bad fumble last week, but I think they get the running game going. And I think they cover. So I'm gonna go ULL.
What's the FPI on that?
81-19.
In favor of Louisiana?
In favor of Louisiana. So you're really close.
The fan vote is 89-11 Louisiana. So flip the one and the nine there at the end.
Yeah.
Here's my not so fast moment.
Whoa.
Here we go. How many passing yards did Louisiana give up last week?
236. Yes.
And that was against Tommy Stevens.
Tommy Stevens.
What kind of weapons did he have around him?
He's got Stephen Guidry. I mean,
he had some pretty good
weapons. They've got some decent wide receivers.
Well, you saw Liberty last year against Troy's defense.
I did.
Yeah. They utilized some weapons.
They did.
Yeah, they
turnovers.
They tore up a Troy. They did take
timely
turnovers. Yeah.
And yes, they did throw the ball.
Here's where we're at. They got something to play for. They got a coach who's literally in a rolling bed in the press box, and you know that camera is going to be on him all game long. You need something to wrap your team around. You need something to unite your team. You got your coach in the press box in a friggin' cast, can't move his back, still coaching you. What better way to motivate your team? I got Liberty in this game, and it's going to be close as heck, but I see Liberty pulling it out, racking up the passing yards. This is the Louisiana just has a weakness in that secondary that I know Liberty can take advantage of it. And since they've got those same experience in the passing game, Liberty.
Okay.
And a close one.
All right.
I went 5-1 last week. If I go 5-1 this week, I'm doing okay.
You're doing great. Where are we going next?
Let's go to North Carolina. Charlotte and App State.
This is, I think 3 years from now, this is going to be, if they play, this is going to be a really fun game.
3 years
Charlotte is a school that, I mean, they've got a good recruiting base right there, obviously. They've got really good facilities. We heard all offseason that sneaky good places to be. Texas State was one of them. San Marcos, it's a great place to be. Charlotte was the next one. I mean, and they've got a lot of money in this school. They've got a lot of backing in their athletic program right now. Charlotte's going to be really good.
It's Georgia State with the budget of South Alabama.
Pretty much.
And those were the two teams that we were fighting over last year.
There's also an old Troy coach, Sean Dawkins, went there.
That's right.
He's their running backs coach. So a little shout out for Troy there. But To me, it's really easy. Charlotte's just not there yet. App State is. I don't think App State really missed a beat. They didn't play a great team in the first week, but they showed everything that they needed to show, which was that they are still fully committed to running the ball. They throw it down the field every now and then still, but they are still fully committed to running the ball. Yes, they lose a running back, but he was third string. And
I was going to say that he's actually the second string. He's the backup.
Okay.
They're going to have to throw the ball more, but this is a Charlotte team where they can get away with it.
Yeah. You still have Darrington Evans there. You still have Thomas Hennigan there. And you still have the X factor of the whole league, I think, this year in Zach Thomas. I mean, the kid's still there. And they're 21 point favorite. Not Coastal, but Charlotte gave up 28 points to Gardner Webb last week.
28 to Gardner Webb.
Yeah. Now, granted, they only gave up 220 yards of total offense, so Gardner Webb really took advantage of all the yards that they got. But Gardner Webb doesn't throw the ball, like, and they don't have the athletes that App State does. And I just don't think App State's – I think they just run it. I think they cover, and I'm going to go App State.
What's the FPI on that?
That one is 89 to 10.
86 in the fan vote for App State. I got to stick with the fans. Got to stick with you, App State, all the way. There is no reason to get off the App State train right now.
Mm-mm.
They were number one in our power poll. Yes. I think they're going to be number one in our power poll next week, barring some bizarre, unforeseen circumstance.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing to worry about is looking at it now, Charlotte, they did run for 300 yards on Gardner Webb.
But it was Gardner Webb.
It's Gardner Webb. Yeah, App State only allowed 131 yards rushing all last week. So, I still think their defense is still there. So, I'm gonna go App State and they cover. So,
all right, let's head south to UCF and Florida Atlantic. This is our out of the Sun Belt Group of Five matchup, the last one, and we decided to step out. UCF and Florida Atlantic, the Cosmonauts and the Lane Train, Citronauts and the Lane Train. Apologies to Alex Funderburk. You can check out his the Forgotten Five blog, Citronauty by Nature, Naughty by Nature, whatever it's called. He runs it over there. Give him a shout out. UCF hasn't lost a beat either. That's another team that just doesn't seem to be slowing down. I don't see a reason for them to.
They lost their quarterback in Mac before the season started, but guess what? They got Brandon Winbush, a Notre Dame transfer, and Brandon Winbush was the guy at Notre Dame for like six games until Ian Book took over. And Ian Book, I mean, we saw on national TV, the kids, he's as advertised. And so Brandon Winbush, graduate transfer, got smart, boom, down. And what a better team to go to. I mean, UCF has athletes all over the field. Like, and this guy gets to go sit there with all these athletes and mm-hmm. just be like, oh, hey.
Mm-hmm.
And then play in a league like the AAC, which is not Notre Dame's schedule this year, which is incredible. FAU looked lost. I know they're playing Ohio State, but they looked lost.
They did that last year. Was it Ohio State they played last year?
It was Oklahoma last year.
It was Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But they looked completely lost in that first game.
Yeah.
And everybody, like, then it was a surprise. This year, it's not so much.
Well, yeah, they also don't have Devin Singletary on their team this year.
That's a big deal.
They had 22 yards of total rushing on Ohio State this past
week. Oof.
Yeah. UCF played FAMU, and FAMU is a very tough team to measure anything against, but they beat FAMU 62-0.
Which is...
Had almost 700 yards of rushing, 700 yards of total offense, and they were about as balanced as you can get. 356 through the air, 338 on the ground.
Honestly, I think you're wrong. I think that's a great measuring stick for UCF because any good team, any top five team should have beaten FAMU 60-0.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they did it. They did what they were supposed to do. They only gave up 40 rushing yards. Four. Yes, four.
Count them on one hand.
So that doesn't bode well for FAU's rushing offense of 22 total yards for this season. I know we're only one game in, but 83-16. For FPI on the Football Power Index. I think Brandon Winbush is a huge X factor for UCF this year. UCF's going to be, I think, toting the flag again this year for the G5. There might be one other team, but I think they're still the team that totes the flag. And they're just that good. Spread's 10.5. I think UCF easily covers that.
Wait, the spread's only 10?
It's 10.5. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
I think they cover that.
Let's put this into perspective. FPI was what, 80 what now?
81-19.
Fan vote. 83-16. Fan vote. This is the biggest margin. UCF 94. Now last week, our biggest margin. Okay, no, our biggest margin was Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Our second biggest margin that wasn't Nebraska, Tennessee 93-7. Mm-hmm. This is 94-6 in UCF. On any other occasion, I would say that's enough of a sign for me to go with FAU.
Uh-huh.
But this week, I just don't see it.
Not jumping on the lane train?
No, I'm not. I think that is a stupid line. And you, if I were a betting person, I would probably go to Mississippi and put like $5 or $10 on UCF to cover spread.
Yeah, no doubt. I think they cover it easily, to be honest with you.
Absolutely.
The FAU, I watched the first half of that game. And again, I know it's Ohio State, but they just looked lost. I mean, they really did.
It was just not good for them.
Yep. So who do we disagree on?
Liberty and Louisiana.
Liberty and Louisiana.
It's literally the only one.
That's the only one. Okay.
But I mean, if you look at it, Coastal playing Kansas, Arkansas State at UNLV. I'm not going to go back and change it because I could change it to UNLV and give us another difference. But I really stand in by Arkansas State in this one. They're actually more of an underdog than we think. Florida State over ULM, Louisiana over Liberty. I'm taking the underdog in that one. App State and Charlotte and UCF Florida Atlantic are on the same level.
Yeah.
we didn't necessarily pick the closest games this week, but they're going to be fun games to watch for sure.
I mean, we could have picked games, South and Jackson State like that, that would have been a pretty easy game to pick.
Yeah.
Georgia Southern and Maine.
Yeah, coming off of LSU, Georgia Southern's going to be really peeved.
Georgia State and Furman.
That may as well be playing Coastal Carolina.
I'm just looking at the spread on this game. Georgia State is only a 7.5-point favorite over Furman.
Oh, damn.
Even after winning Tennessee. So
we should have picked that one.
That might be another one to say that they're
keep an eye on that one. That could be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting.
If Georgia State beats Tennessee and loses to Furman, that's going to be really interesting.
And then the only other game we had was Wyoming and Texas State. Obviously, Wyoming coming off a big win over Missouri. Texas State, not so great of a showing against Texas A&M. So,
let's take a step back because we didn't address that. We talked about them last. We didn't talk about them last week because it was a Thursday game, and we didn't talk about them this week yet. But that Texas State defense held Texas A&M to 28 points through the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
28 points.
They did, but their defense still gave up 500 yards of total offense. And
okay,
granted, Texas A&M, good offense.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. 28 points through the third quarter, and that's without the offense that they...
The offense just still isn't there, though.
Exactly.
It's just not there.
Exactly. For Texas State to hold them to 28 points through the third quarter with no offense... That's what I'm saying.
Going back to last year, they've scored only 7 points in their last four games each time. They've literally, their last four games going back to last year, 41-7, 33-7, 12-7, 38-7.
And what was last week?
41-7. So the offense just isn't there, and it's going to take Spavital some time. Now, granted, the spread of that game, 7 points to Wyoming. Who knows?
I'd say Wyoming covers, but anyway.
All right. Well, another exciting week. Know Your Enemy. Great job this week. Thank you so much to our two guests, Scott Chasen
and Joe Cashin.
Joe Cashin. You guys have no idea how much we struggled with those two names before the show started. I really like the segment. I think people do. And, obviously, hopefully we grab another win. ULM, Florida State. That's kind of the only option. Coastal Carolina over Kansas? Heck, I'd be fine with that. I'd be fine being wrong with that one.
But you know what? I'm going to be completely honest with you. Week one, the games in week one, pretty happy with it.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty happy with the way it turned out.
No, I was fine with it. So
let's look ahead to week three. You want to go ahead and do it?
Sure.
You excited for this? I'm excited for this. Next week, we've got our game of the week. It's Southern Miss and Troy.
Oh. Boy,
we're doing it.
There are too many like intertwining... just lines through each program.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. And it's going to be a very interesting show.
And we can't wait to bring it to you. That's all next week. Until then, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Colin. We're the Bench Boys. And you can follow us on everything.
Everything. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter at the OG Bench Boys. He's at Colin Cahill 13. I'm at Thomas Gleaton. We are on Anchor, Spotify, Luminary, Podbean, Google Play. We're on Shoutcast. We're on, if you can think of a podcast place, we're on it. If you can think of a place and we're not on it, let us know. We'll change that.
And if you're down in the Baldwin County area this week, you can catch us on
WHEP AM and FM. That's the sports voice of Baldwin County. Little fun segment we just got to do. Excited about that. So
stay tuned. Obviously this week, hopefully we grab some upsets, and as usual, just come on back.